Well, welcome back to another of our podcast episodes for our Apostles' Creed series. Hopefully these podcasts are helpful to you, and we're glad that you're able to join us. Today we have Keith Baker, who preached for us on the weekend. Hi, Keith.
G'day, Paul. Nice to be here.
And we have the wonderful Naomi Piggott. Reverend Naomi Piggott. Yeah, that sounds good. With us. Welcome, Naomi.
Thank you. Thanks good for having me.
Good to see you. So you're going to answer our plethora of questions that have come in. So here it is now. I thought we might start, firstly, because when we talk about the idea of the Holy Universal Church, there's some misconceptions around the word church or different definitions of it. So can we just maybe identify what some people think of as church, and then maybe then bring it back to what the creed is talking about in its context for church? So how, I don't mind who goes first.
So what we think people think when they think of church?
Yeah, that's right.
I think from like a non-Christian perspective, it's like a thing you do. Like it's very religious. Like it's a habit that's not necessarily freeing or good. I don't know, like you go to church, like it's very works-based doing, very place. Mm. Like it's a building, it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's
so you do church.
Yeah, you do church.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily viewed as like a, that obviously wouldn't be the highlight of your week, like, oh.
Yeah.
You have to do church to, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's good.
Believe what you believe or.
Yep. Any other
to keep up your membership.
Yeah.
Unless you.
Yeah.
It's like a golf. If you don't play enough rounds in the year, though, you don't keep your membership up, right? So if you don't turn up enough to church, they'll cancel your membership somehow or something like that.
I was thinking more like a heavenly star chart, you know.
Sure, okay. Anyway. Well, I think that's what people think, though. That's like, oh, so you have to go because you want to belong and you have to turn up. I remember as a kid, you remember this thing where you put your hands together and you go, here is the church,
here is the steeple.
Open the doors and here are the people, right?
Yeah.
This works really well on a podcast for a very visual sort of thing.
Keith is currently holding up his hands in an apex formation.
Audio subtitles. That thing, though, separates the church from the people.
Mm.
And I think that's what most people think. It's a building, right? A building where people go to do something. I don't know what it is. It's usually on a Sunday. Mm. Or people use the church to talk about, you know, the institution
of authority,
the church.
It's oppression.
Mm.
Mm.
It's rules.
Mm. And the church has done terrible things.
Yeah.
As, you know, that sort of sense of an institution run by corrupt people under the premise of being spiritual.
Yeah, that's right. And maybe that's a good segue into a question we got that I'm just about to read out.
That's good.
The question was, as the church, the in capital letters, as the church that believes in the Apostles' Creed, as the creed unites us, why are we divided by things that are not part of the Apostles' Creed? Denominations like the one we are part of is divided from others based on things other than this creed. Why?
Well, the one-word answer is sin.
Yes.
So can we move on?
Next question. I was hoping for a little more.
Because
the fact they mentioned denominations has that church institutional idea. So we've got to make sure that we're understanding the distinction, I think, as we answer the question.
Well, it is a good question. I understand the premise. Because we talk about unity and the one church. We talked about that on Sunday. Denominations are organizations of churches. And there are different denominations because of different views of how to organize yourself as a church, or different views on particular doctrinal bases, which I would say, like, sometimes they're not central. People think they're central. In the case of, say, the Roman Catholic Church and the Protestant Church, that then I think the divisions are more kind of central, are more fundamental. But say the difference between Anglicans and Baptists and Presbyterians and churches of Christ and what are the Australian Christian churches sort of denomination. A lot of those are largely around style of church government. So the Baptists and the Presbyterians, they don't have bishops. Anglicans organize themselves in a threefold order of deacons and presbyters and bishops. That's just the way that they've seen in the Bible it's organized. The Presbyterians go, well, aren't they organized by congregations? And so we want to do that with elders.
Yeah.
And so there's not a lot around that. Baptists, there's just a belief that it should be adults only who are baptized rather than infants baptism, like Anglicans believe. There's not a lot that divides, say, the Presbyterians and the Baptists and some of the Churches of Christ and Anglicans. Like the overlap of what we agree on is far more, I think, than the areas that we don't agree on. Mm. But somewhere down the line, because we're not perfect readers of Scripture, you know, people have divided over their interpretation of should we do adult baptism or not, or do infant baptism.
Yeah.
And organizations have sort of arisen because of that. But I would say, you know, I have far more in common with my Baptist brothers and sisters, or, you know, my gospel believing Presbyterian brothers and sisters, or Churches of Christ, you know, gospel believing, than I do with some Anglicans in different parts of the world, just because they've got the same word Anglican in front of their church. It's really what we're united by is the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. And some things that have caused denominations to arise are secondary, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, thanks. Did you want to add to that?
There was something that I read just about using the word Catholic versus universal, and another way that they had phrased it, which I thought was beautiful and a positive kind of spin on this, was unity in diversity. Mm. And so it's the sense that we know what we're unified by, and it's okay that we have diversity amongst the other things. So, you know, as long as that Baptist church is, you know, still based on the, you know, Peter's confession of who Christ is and all the apostolic teachings, then it can be celebrated that although we are different, we do have the creed. The creed isn't a thing that we have that's the same that then we're like somehow we've split and divided and that's really negative. It is what it is. And, you know, one day, God willing, in heaven, we'll be, you know, we're brothers and sisters alongside. And so there's unity in diversity can be a positive and a Christ glorifying thing. It's not necessarily, denominations aren't necessarily a sign of complete, you know, downfall or the breaking up of something. Mm. It's difference in expression. And as long as we're coming back to this one thing, as long as we're coming back to that shared belief, then that's something that can be celebrated and be pretty.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I think you both touched on it, but I'm just, maybe we could be a bit more explicit on, so what is it about this line in the creed, right? I believe in the whole one holy universal church, the communion of saints. What is it about that that can unite us out of the creed? How is the creed being used to unite us with that statement?
Oh, sure. So let's talk about the unity rather than the division kind of part of it. The unity, I talked a bit on Sunday about the one church that's bought by the blood of Jesus. You mentioned this in your sermon, Paul, from Acts 20, where Paul's talking to the Ephesian elders and he talks about the church, which is bought by the blood of Christ. And you see it there in Hebrews 12, where the writer is speaking to the Christians in the congregation, probably in Rome, and saying to them, you have come, that is presently, right now, you have come to Mount Zion, to the heavenly Jerusalem, to the church of the firstborn, the assembly of angels in joyous worship. And so there is one church that is now gathered around the throne spiritually. The theological, eschatologically, if you like. So we're seated in heaven right now. So we're gathered in heaven right now. That one church has different local expressions, which are all valid churches. They're united by the gospel and the lordship of Jesus Christ, even as the diversity is in their different locations and the different sets of people and the different pastors looking after them. But each of those is like the local outpost of the one true church.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, thanks. So did you want to add to that, Amy? So maybe another question would be is can you give us an idea of how you approach this topic with the kids?
With the kids,
that,
sure.
That would be really helpful.
We try to talk about church as not just the place but the people, so we used a lot of family language. And one of the things we do lots of family language regularly in Bible teaching with kids, but to try and expand their view of identity not just within themselves or their group or their church. And so, like, even a physical way of doing this, like we had our preschoolers stand in a very small circle and say, we are, you know, this is how big we are, or I don't know, however 30-something pre-to-school age group people that we had, and said, we're all God's team, we're all here together. Everyone take a step back. Like, we're only pre-to-school. There's big, it's kids alive on a Sunday. There's lots more kids than that, all right? And we're all in God's family, on God's team. Take a step back. We come at 10 a.m., but St. Paul's is bigger than this. Take a step back. Sydney, take a step back. Australia, take a step back. The world.
Wow, that's excellent.
Abstract-wise, they're not going to quite get thousands of years before that take a step back. But again, just trying to stretch the view of it's people, and it's people in this place, and that this place is special because you've got a lot of belonging and faith-based association with, like, place and church, the building, but to kind of just stretch their idea and concept of what that family looks like. And then for the bigger kids to push it further to get them to think through contributing to that, not just consuming that. So challenging them on why you go or how often you go. Mm. And we go because of who we are, not because it's a thing that, you know, you have to or we do or whatever else. So we go even if our best friend's not there. We go even when we're tired because it's not just how we feel about church. It's about who we are and our identity that is part of why we gather and what we do. So,
so good.
Yeah. So I understand there was a slogan that helped you understand the communion of saints from the weekend. Can you share that with us?
Yeah. It was a quote from a book that I didn't think through the implications of the use of the word we with children, which I probably should know about after so many years. But it was, it's not me, but we. It's not I, but us.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And so, yeah. And I think kids, I mean, we think they're pretty individualistic and, you know, I like the train table and thus I don't want to leave the train table, or they're in primary school and it's like, well, my mate's not here and so I'm going to sulk in the back of the room. But I think that's probably pretty transferable across to adults and how we can sometimes approach church and think, oh, like, I just want to go but I don't want to talk to people, or and so pushing beyond the individualistic kind of consumer nature that we can sometimes come to a building with to kind of shift that mindset and be like, it's an identity thing about who we're gathering around and who we're gathering with, like, and like what you said about the outpost and stuff, like, it's bigger than just us on a Sunday at St. Paul's. It's so much more important. And I think it's like, any habit that you give it time and importance will grow in time and importance and stuff. Yeah, so what are we investing in it? What are we giving sacrificially to be there? I think, Keith, you said a bit about that. Like, you've got to give up to get, and we need to think that through rightly to be a good community.
Mm, yeah, thanks. Coincidentally, or maybe divinely, both of us went to Ephesians 5 and using the metaphor of marriage. Mm. I tried a little bit around Mark 3 when Jesus' parents, mother and brother and sister were there, and he talks about who are my mother, brother and sisters, those who do the will of my Father in heaven. Again, so I'm just interested maybe to press into the importance of family or familial language around the communion of saints. Why did you think it was a good idea to go there, and what were you trying to get across with that?
Yeah, well, I went to Ephesians 5 to talk about the holiness of the church. You get Paul using the language, husbands love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, to have her washed clean, and therefore to help people think about the church as Christ's bride. That is what we are turning up to, us together, we're the bride. Jesus has washed us clean and is washing us clean so that on the final day we will be washed clean, presented to him. Now, in addition to being his bride, I think there's lots of places we could have gone to talk about church as family. That is, we're brothers and sisters, we're co-heirs with Christ. He's the firstborn of many brothers, all of those sorts of things. And what that means, I mean, it really reinforces what Nay was saying, that it's not just like my choices and my thinking about church are not just about me and what I like and what I want to get. I actually belong to others. And so I my behaviors and my actions and my planning and my priorities need to take that into account. It's not just about what can I get. It's about who do I belong to? How can I serve them even as I'm served? We talked about Christ, the ascended Christ that we looked at the last couple of weeks, who gives his spirit, which was last week, to the church in order for the building up of the church. Christ places things in our hands, not for our identity, not for our hoarding, not for our resume, but for us to give to others. So his strategy for making the church holy as his bride is for the family to gather and share. And as they do that, so we are encouraged and nurtured and challenged and built up as we become more like Christ together. But that the family thing is really important as a way of marking our identity. That is, it's not just about things that describe me. I need to recognize I am a brother, I'm a sister of others who are in church. Therefore, God's designed for me to be in their lives and them to be in my life. So when I'm not in the gathering, I can't do that. And you can ring and all that sort of stuff, but they're all modern ways of connecting that who knows whether they were in Paul's mind when he wrote. They're probably, I'm guessing, not. It was about being together in one place.
And that's really helpful, I think. And that doesn't have to be on a Sunday. Like, we can open our homes and be hospitable. We can go to small groups or read the Bible with people, those kinds of things. That I think that's all part of the gathering, where we're together and learning and growing from each other. There was one person I quoted, I think it might have been Max Licato, and he was talking about the fact that my doubts go away when I'm with other people and sharing with them and learning from each other as we mingle and mix, I think was the quote. And I think Sam Chan actually hinted on this when he came and taught us when we were doing Mission 2020. He talked about the idea that when we're together, your doubts go away when you're with people who are believing the same kinds of things. And that's why it's important that we kind of do that stuff. That's really helpful. I did have another question, and it's coming to me quickly, and I'm just buying time here till it comes back to me.
Is that the sound of you thinking?
That's the sound of me thinking.
It's the wind whistling between his ears.
Do you think with the familiar language that helps kids get the concept a bit more?
I think it's easy to concrete the stuff that you know in family so that they can grasp that and then say, and that applies to this family, to God's family. I don't think that would necessarily work. I think maybe cross-culturally some it might work better because they have a stronger sense of family in a multi-generational sense. Others wouldn't. I think just while Keith was talking, I wonder, we are blessed in this area where we are in Castle Hill with a lot of strong families, good Christian families, like that's the vibe, that's the community, that's the area that we live in. And so I think it would be helpful for us to think that that is a good blessing from God, but to do the same thing as we're trying to encourage the kids, to stretch that out. While if you were in a church where none of your family believed, you're in a country where you're, you know, maybe even relatively persecuted. You know, you've got your seven people together on a Sunday. They're all different ages. You are related to none of them. Would they have a greater grasp than we as to what it is to be a family of believers? Because they only have each other. They must rely on each other. There's no one else to. And I just think, what could we learn from that? We get so caught up in our family and our lives to be challenged and pushed beyond that, to think that, yeah, we are going for the other, that just because we might have a neat family, you know, we're all married with children and that's a big time, relationship, commitment and whatever else, but we want our church to be one that loves, you know, singles and young and old and those with disabilities and those that are new to faith and those who have, you know, years of faith. And that's what family looks like, and how do we love in that context? And
That's good. And I think the word you touched on before was the word belong. And I think that's important. It's not just about attending. It's about belonging. And that's really helpful. I remember my question now. It was around, because we talked about some of the misconceptions with church or how we might define it. I'm just wondering some of the misconceptions or how we might define the word saints.
Sure.
So how might we define that?
I don't think kids do. I think I loved Keith kind of said, you could think of this in this way, this in this way. And I'm like, oh, man, like if I had a group of kids, I'd be like, or you could have got the audience to call up with like quick thinking, like church, what's your first word? Then put it together and see what kind of mangled description we came up with.
Yeah.
So I don't think they would, but I think, I don't know, here I think they probably just think, I mean, it probably doesn't help Catholic, and the people that are special and they get... I don't know, the Pope does something and they become something and they're special, I think is the, I don't know, the general sense of the word probably.
Yeah.
Certainly one of the misconceptions.
Yeah. Simon Manchester put it like this in a thing I heard him say. We think of saints as super people like that or dead people.
super dead people.
Or super dead people. Yeah. To which I added, you know, if you're here in this part, you think of the Dragons football team because people are saints. And we did have a rather energetic supporter, drumming supporter yell out at that point. But yeah, so it's not a word in currency anywhere near its biblical usage. No one really thinks of it like that. So we have some work to do in teaching that, which of course saints in the New Testament are Christians. They are people who've been called to be holy, and that's not a particular subset of Christians. That's all Christians because the holy person is Jesus. He's the new Adam, the second Adam. We're all called to conform to him, and we've been given his spirit that is shaping us to be like him. So churches are made up of gatherings of saints. Yeah. You see those two things put together in the start of 1 Corinthians where you have these two expressions used side by side. Paul says, to the church of God in Corinth, to all those called to be holy, to all the saints. And those two things are, they define each other. They're next to each other. So, so saints are people who are saved by Jesus and called to become like him.
Excellent. Yeah. So it's St. Keith, St. Naomi.
Yeah, that's it.
So good.
Which comes back to like what we were saying before, like it's a very much an identity thing, and I don't know if that's where you're going, Paul, in terms of the line in the creed. That's why it's in there and why it's so important, because it's more than, it's so much more than where we started, which was church is a, it's a do.
Yeah.
It's a do, it's a who. There you go. Here's another rhyme for you.
That's good.
Thank
that's
you,
good.
Mrs. Seuss.
To tell people like this is who you are and this is who you are in Christ, and you're called to be holy, but you are holy, and we are that together. And we do that we express that in our, I don't know, a God-given and biblically taught way by being.
Yeah. That's good.
The church and belonging, yeah.
It's interesting that newer translations of the Bible actually aren't using the word saints anymore. In the beginning of those letters, they're using God's holy people, which is actually more literal, to be honest. But
yeah,
it's interesting that we've moved away from that word a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your answers and your conversation today. Thanks also to our producer, Alex. Sorry, mate, I didn't say hi before.
Hey, Alex.
So hopefully that helps you and gives you some cause to think about some things around church. It was a good weekend last weekend, so we're grateful you could be there and also join us on this podcast. And we will see you or hear from you, or you hear from us again next week. Thank you, Keith.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Naomi. Thanks. And we'll see you later.
Bye.